Well, I'd like to welcome Stephanie Mills to Michigan State University and the Michigan Writers Symposium Series, and want to take this opportunity to get a little information about your roots to Michigan and how did you come to be in Michigan in the first place?
Well, I was following a guy. I had been living in the San Francisco Bay Area since the late 60s. I'd gone to college there and become involved in the ecology movement, specifically the bioregional movement, and was working in various organizations and publications, that sort of thing, and trying to maintain a vocation in ecology and ecological activism. And in 1984, the first North American Bioregional Congress was held in Missouri, actually, kind of not far from Kansas City. And I wanted very much to attend that because I'd been working with bioregionalists in San Francisco at the Planet Drum Foundation. And I just knew that that was going to be a meeting of not like-minded people in the sense of homogeneous, but people who shared a common vision and a common critique of industrial civilization. And so I attended it, and I met lots of people who have become friends and colleagues since. Had many encounters that have, developed into learning opportunities. And I met a fellow named Phil Teal, who was from Maple City, Michigan, and had organized the first Great Lakes Bioregional Congress. And we were quite smitten, and one thing led to another. So not very long thereafter, I came to Maple City and took up residence in Michigan. So that's how I got to Michigan. The attractions were many. I mean, certainly Phil was a marvelously attractive person for his commitments and just who he was, and how he lived, and that he was part of a cohort of back to the land folks. Many people who kind of moved up from southern Michigan and Ohio and were walking their talk to a greater degree than seemed possible for me to do at that time in the Bay Area, which was just being swept by the sort of rise of the digital fortunes, and it was becoming ever more gentrified. And so the social niches for radical ecologists or bioregionalists or bohemians, I don't know how to characterize myself, but the niches were shrinking, and I felt like I was only paying lip service to my ideals. And so the move to Michigan and the alliance with Phil represented a possibility of, greater integrity and to try something new and good. So that's how I got here. And our partnership didn't last terribly long. It was eventful. But I found myself very quickly embraced by a community of people who were involved in peace and ecology activism in our local cooperative, and just a vibrant counterculture. And it's been a great gift to develop such friendships and learn from such people, and to be able to be in a place that's on more of a human scale, However, I mean, part of my motivation for leaving, I'm sure, was the idea of just running away from the, the degradation of a great city, I mean, anybody, I'm sure that any young person who goes to San Francisco today will find it wondrous and find, you know, a moment of opportunity and a lot of intellectual excitement. But I'd been there for 15 years and, you know, and it was the 80s and the Reagan era was beginning to break over the economy and over society and things were changing in ways that I wasn't enjoying witnessing. But the fact is that that dynamic continues everywhere. So over the decade and a half that I've lived in northern Michigan, I watched, you know, sprawl begin to erode our landscape as well. So the moral of the story being you can't run. You can run, but you can't hide. And the bioregional idea is to, you know, to settle in and work, you know, the kind of bloom where you're planted, and let's see what we as a community can make in this place that can be sustained. So I remain in Michigan because I love it, and especially, you know, well, I've got some land, and that is such a profound relationship. To spend years in the same place, on the same place, you know, watching what transpires when you plant trees, or, you know, 15 winters pummel the lichen. That's not anything to be casual about.
How would you say that the experience in those last decade and a half has affected your writing? Mm-hmm. Did you see a demarcation point between what you were writing and how you were writing and the lens that you were writing through from your California days as opposed to your days in Michigan?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. In California, a lot of the writing I was doing was essays and editorials. And so it was more... rhetorical. I mean, that's a respectable term. You know, it was a rhetoric of ecological activism and bioregionalism, and I was writing about a range of subjects. I did a brief series for the San Francisco Chronicle that included pieces on appropriate technology and voluntary simplicity, and. You know, various elements of an alternative and sustainable life way. Coming to Michigan and being able to live in the country, my writing shifted. I began to write more descriptively about the nature surrounding me and to try to get some natural history. I certainly wouldn't ever... presume to describe myself as a natural historian, but I think that's tremendously important. And some of my, you know, the writers I most admire are the ones who have that knowledge and can work with it. And I think of someone like Gary Snyder, you know, just such a great poet and a great bioregional activist, really, in his home, and the way he combines erudition and on-the-ground experience and observation is something I aspire to do. So a lot of my writing since I arrived in Michigan has been trying to capture and paint and understand what's really going on out there in the, you know, to sort of fathom the life and character and dynamic of the scenery and not just have it be scenery, you know, backdrop to my mentation.
And what kind of works are you pursuing now? Anything that's different from tracks that you've been on before? I mean, your last book was Turning Away from Technology, and we were talking on the way over here about another big teach-in that you visited last spring.
Yes.
Are you working on some things in that same line, or are you going in different lines or parallel lines? Or?
Well, the next work I'll be involved in is kind of a departure from nature and ecology. It's going to be a biography of an activist, Robert Swan, who was, he's 83 now, and he was a conscientious objector during the Second World War, and just a born pacifist, really a remarkable man, and a beautiful soul, and really, how to describe it, you know, kind of neither left nor right, but someone whose guiding light has been decentralist work. So when he was incarcerated for a couple of years, he found himself in one of the most remarkable free universities in the country, because the other conscientious objectors were all, or most of them had some very, well, I guess iconoclastic views. So it was in prison that he learned about the work of thinkers like Lewis Mumford. He learned about the work of an economist named Ralph Borsodi, whose whole career was sort of devoted to questioning the legitimacy of currency, of a central bank, a government central bank issuing currency. Another influence in Bob's life was a correspondence course that Arthur Morgan's Community Services offered. Morgan was at one time one of the directors of the TVA and also president of Antioch University, and very committed to the idea that the small community is a crucible of morality and ethics and citizenship. So the organization Community Services, which has been in existence, well, I suppose more than 50 years, has just been doing educational work to explore the processes and practices of having viable small communities. So all of those, all of that sort of intellectual affair was before Bob. He also met Bayard Rustin, who was both a peace and civil rights activist. And then when he emerged, he got involved in nonviolent direct action right away with... oh gosh, what was the name of the organization he and his then wife started? Can't remember. But his life is just kind of like an encyclopedia of sort of the third, you know, the third tradition in American radicalism, which is, I mean, it's a charged word, but I think the most accurate description is anarchist, not in the sense of violent.
Right.
Anarchy, but of really reposing authority in the community, in self managing groups of human beings in their places, in life places. So from the peace activism, he went into an exploration of currency and land tenure and that kind of thing, and met lots of people along the way. Not terribly well known. And for me, as a writer and a thinker, it's a wonderful opportunity to try to capture kind of a person of extraordinary courage and vision, you know, to convey those qualities and not to idealize them or put them beyond reach of any of us. And then also to recount for, you know, my generation and those that that are already here, because there are a couple of them, and beyond this, you know, a portion of the social movements in the U.S., because that history is buried over and over and over again. I mean, I wasn't actively participating in opposition to the Vietnam War, but I, you know, rhetorically, I was against it, and I had this misconception that the peace movement started then, but in fact, organizations like the War Resisters League and the Fellowship of Reconciliation have been around, were around for the better part of the 20th century. And so I want in this book to learn that history myself. Heaven help me, I'm going to have to learn some economics to explain Swan's work with alternative currencies and land trusts. But it should be a wonderful project and also very challenging because I've never done one of those before. So we'll see. It appeals to me greatly. I mean, he's just a remarkable person. I've known him. And he and his partner, Susan Witt, founded the E.F. Schumacher Society in the U.S. And I've had dealings and friendship with them over about a decade now. And so there's that aspect of it, of just paying tribute to someone who really deserves it and then trying to, you know, bring back to light this movement history. And as I say, deal with economics because it is so radical. I mean, it's the most radical form of questioning. Another very fundamental part of Bob's work has been looking at the question of land tenure and whether land should be held as property. And, of course, that relates back to ecology because, as, you know, Aldo Leopold talked about the problems that stem from treating land as a commodity which we can possess and alienate rather than as a community to which we belong. And I have, in July, I finished a book which will be appearing in the fall of, in February of 2002, which is very, very naturey. It's titled Epicurean Simplicity. And it's kind of an essay come memoir about living simply in my place and the morality and trying to live a life informed by an ecological morality and unearthing the what seems like just all but an inescapable degree of complicity in the devastation of the planet, but also unsurpassed joy in just attending the moment and witnessing the life of the other beings that surrounds me. So that was a wonderful book to write. I say that now, total lie. I mean, halfway through it, I was banging my head on the desk and saying, I'm never going to write again. This is horrible. But it's like they say, the best thing about writing is having written.
I was just reading a quote of that typist the other day. We don't have much time left, but I guess a question comes to mind. What would you like to be remembered by from people who read your works and maybe someday your biography, since you're writing a biography yourself?
Wow. I would like, you know, if my life bears this out, I would like to be remembered for having my work and my actions serve the flourishing of life on Earth and attest to its beauty and wonder.
That's pretty powerful. Sounds like you're doing a pretty good job already.
Well, I feel very fortunate to be able to live and work the way I do, and that I experience it as a vocation. You know, this is not something I would have thought up out of the whole cloth. It was more of a calling, and I've just followed my nose.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, and it's probably time to go get you something to eat.
I second that emotion. That's very ecological. We organisms have tropisms.